Welcome into the College Hoops Hive. I'm your host, Leif Tulin, and I'm joined by my guy, Richard Stamen, a.k.a. Mavs Draft on Twitter. If you don't follow him already, you definitely should. And this podcast is his sole purpose is to discuss college hoops, the game I love, and really dive deep into who's the best team, what players are playing the best, and have no agenda toward the draft or any college affiliate. Just talk about college basketball with an unbiased perspective and try to give you, the listeners, a perspective that is not one of the people who are pumping information, but just the observations I make by watching way too much college basketball. And I bring in guests that I think are very knowledgeable and fun to speak to. So first on the agenda, I had to get my guy Richard Stamen on, and thank you for joining me, Richard.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. I'm excited for this to get started. Obviously, we do a lot of stuff on Locked On and appreciate the kind words, but I'm excited to talk in depth about college basketball.
Yeah, and so without further ado, I think the first thing we got to talk about, college basketball started about 3 weeks ago. It's really kicked off. Feast Week just happened, and you've got some of the Big Ten ACC coming up. You've got Big East, Big 12, and this is really where I love college basketball. The end of Feast Week. Feast Week's amazing, but the quality of basketball can be varying. Like, you see good teams playing poor basketball, or you see, for instance, the prime example would be North Carolina, Alabama was 4 overtimes. It's a great game, right? No, it was a pretty poor game, but it doesn't mean that it's not good college basketball. It's good for the experience of college basketball. It intersects with good basketball in the conference play. And kind of the Big Ten ACC right after Feast Week is where you get a litmus test for teams and you say, wow, this team's actually really good, or this team's, you know, you're kind of seeing some flaws for teams that were anticipated to be pretty good. And that's where I want to begin. I want to talk about how much parity there is. And like for those of you who don't know, I've typically in the past few years been like all or nothing on a team, saying this team's the best team in college basketball and it's not close. And that would be disparity. For instance, Baylor and Gonzaga were head and shoulders above everyone else, and they went to the championship. And anyone who's listened to me on any network knows I was on the Baylor train on that. And then Gonzaga was considered to be the best team last year. They turned out not to win, but that would be, I think if they were to play a series, Gonzaga would have a very serious claim last year. This year, North Carolina, Gonzaga, Baylor, a couple other teams really struggled out of the gates. Duke, Kansas, none of those teams that you would think, wow, these in Kentucky, all these teams are that were projected to be top 10, top 5, came out of the chute slowly and had noticeable flaws. And you see a couple other teams that have kind of taken the reins by storm. Virginia comes to mind, obviously Houston and Texas were teams that were ranked pretty highly, but are now 1, 2, and 3, those teams respectively. And my takeaway is that there's not a great team in college basketball yet. However, there is a great potential for great battles to assert themselves as the great team. And that's something I've missed in college basketball. I wish there was a great team that would emerge. But at the same time, the parity is something I really am impressed with. And I think it's aided by the fact that the Blue Bloods are a little bit down and they get a high recognition. And we'll talk about teams that we think are down and out and teams that we think, you know, still have stuff to learn and prove and can get better. But as for now, Richard, I want to get your take on parity, because some of these teams are really good, but they're not great. And there's a lot of those caliber teams, because I was trying to think of, hey, if I were to make a top 10 after Feast Week, how would I make it? And then how would it change compared to how I would make a top 10 that I think for contenders rather than just recent results? And it changes drastically.
Yeah, the parity has just been ridiculous. And I think you look at, obviously, the top, I'd say 5 teams are pretty head and shoulders right now over everybody else, with Houston, Texas, Virginia, Arizona, Purdue. But I think you can even throw in the mix Baylor. I mean, I say that those teams were head and shoulders above, but Virginia beat Baylor. Baylor was the only team to even hang 70 on Virginia. They got 79. I think we'll learn a lot about this upcoming the teams this upcoming week. I think generally December schedules crank up a little bit more. You look at Creighton plays Texas. That's obviously 7-2. So that's a big matchup. Even other games, I mean, Indiana plays North Carolina, number 10. I think we're going to learn a lot this week, but as of right now, like, there's a lot of parity and there's really no great team, but there's, like you said, there's just a lot of candidates to be great teams. We just have no idea who those teams are.
Yeah. And I guess I'm a little bit skeptical of a couple of the teams that have been elevated so highly inside the rankings. Purdue was, they were the team of the weekend for me. They looked phenomenal in beating Gonzaga and Duke. Gonzaga, I have a lot of issues with, and I will air that out in a little bit. But that was a team that was expected to be top tier. They have two losses early. Duke has two losses early. Both of them are pretty solid losses, as are Gonzaga's. But that said, Purdue's the team of the weekend, but it's hard to be so reliant on a big guy. They are able to play off of Zach Edey beautifully. They swing the ball. They're kind of one of those teams that you're like, Matt Painter can coach these guys up. Whereas last year he had an uber athlete in Jaden Ivey, and I felt like Painter did a poor job getting the ball to Ivey in advantageous spots. Whereas when he had Carson Edwards, he did a phenomenal job. When he had Vincent Edwards playing with some of the other big fellows they've had, I've really enjoyed watching Purdue teams. And that was my team of the weekend. But my skepticism comes with, it's really hard to have your best player be a big man in college basketball unless you've got a guard that can win you games late. Because, for instance, Gonzaga's issue last year didn't have a guy that could score other than Drew Timmy late. Andrew Nembhard was an awesome player, but he was a creator. And I think that's still an issue for Gonzaga. Oscar Tshiebwe, I think that would have been an issue for Kentucky with Ty Washington hobbled last year should they have gotten out of the first round. And maybe that was part of the issue, but that was more of just a shock. But I think a lot of the best teams this year are big dominated, and you wonder who can step up and be the best guards. And that's why I think a team like Baylor, like you mentioned, really is an interesting one. One thing I'll bring up is Connecticut and Purdue, UConn and Purdue are 6-7 in KenPom. I think they're 5-8, Purdue's 5th and Connecticut's 8th. And I think that's reactionary. Arizona's number 10 in KenPom. They're number 4 in the country. But I think all those teams are kind of top 15-ish. But that means a lot of really good teams have fallen. North Carolina's 21st in KenPom after a kind of an ugly weekend, but they were number 1 entering the season. So the reason I bring all this up is, do you think the rankings right now are an accurate representation of who's the best team, right, or will be the best team? Or do you think they're more reactionary and just because of, and for lack of a better word, they're a little bit punitive because, you know, if you lose a game that you shouldn't in one of these tournaments, you're like, oh boy, like what a disaster. But honestly, I'm okay with it early on.
I don't really know what to make of the rankings just because some teams have played cupcakes. Some teams have played tougher schedules. I mean, you look at just across the board, who's playing who this upcoming week, for example. This is not, I don't know why I'm singling out this team, but just looking at the next one, I mean, Auburn plays Colgate, Tennessee plays McNeese State. They're both 5-1, 7-0, top 15 teams. Gonzaga plays Baylor. They have two losses, but are number 14. You kind of said it. I don't have full trust in Purdue just yet. They play Florida State, who preseason, that would have been a very telling game, but who knows right now. But just looking at it, I think there's a lot of teams that could have been in the top 25 that really are better than some of the teams, in my opinion, that are still in there. I think we're going to see a lot of shakeup in the next week just because, like I said before, this week is very telling. You look at some of the matchups. Ohio State plays Duke. That's a top 25 matchup. You have UCLA play Stanford. That's already a Pac-12 conference game, a little bit awkwardly placed, but still you have Michigan State, Notre Dame, North Carolina, Indiana. There's just a lot of these games like Gonzaga, Baylor, Creighton, Texas. There's just a lot. And I think the rankings and the picture of the landscape of college basketball will become a little bit clearer this week. But at the same time, it's the last day, one of the last days of November as we're recording. How much can you actually make long-term judgments from December college basketball? Like, I mean, even this point last year, this is my NBA draft mind coming in, but Malachi Branham was an irrelevant player for Ohio State 12 months ago. So honestly, even 11 months ago, he didn't come around till January. Things change. So it's hard to really overreact for me on what I see now, but I think you can still get a clear picture of what is to come from December, especially these upcoming matchups.
You present a really good point there. Things do change and they will change. But I think early in a season, the biggest thing you can take away is how teams play together. And that's where people improve. And that's where the really good teams, you're like, oh boy, they're already really good together. But I think a lot of the best teams that were expected to be the best don't have an identity. And that actually concerns me quite a bit. For instance, I'll explain that theory. The teams that have frustrated me the most this year, Gonzaga and Kentucky, and they actually played each other. And Gonzaga dominated Kentucky in a matchup. I thought Kentucky should have won. Gonzaga's issue is their guards are supremely overrated in an unfair sense, because they're expected to replicate the production of veteran guards ahead of them. Then the guards ahead of them were Jalen Suggs, Andrew Nembhard. Then Andrew Nembhard took an enormous step last year, is now balling for the Pacers after Jalen Suggs went to the league, and he played with Rasir Bolton and elevated Bolton. Bolton stayed stagnant. Malachi Smith was expected to be an impact transfer from Chattanooga, but I think the jump has been a little bit rocky for Chattanooga transfer Malachi Smith. I think Nolan Hickman's actually played pretty well, but he's not a true point guard. And Drew Timmy is the only true scorer on this team. The player that's impressed me the most, and honestly, Timmy's had a tough job because he's basically had to bring the ball up and be a facilitator. So his scoring has become more difficult and more exerting. It's more of an effort for him to do so. Anton Watson and Julian Strother have taken a lead, but the guards aren't very good. As for Kentucky, I think their biggest weakness is Xavier Wheeler, who is their point guard. And that's never a good sign. I think if Kentucky were to commit to playing Cason Wallace as the point guard, they would probably do better as a team. And that's when they made their run against Gonzaga. I watched them play Michigan State as well. And I think the issue with Kentucky is Calipari is good at getting their teams ready by the end of the year. And that's true, but they typically don't win when they're young. This is an older team. There's no excuse for them to have lack cohesion and not be able to shoot the ball when you've got a dominant force like Oscar Tshiebwe, much less run plays as he complained they couldn't do against Gonzaga because of Tshiebwe missing time. That's the reigning national player of the year, and you're airing him out to dry because it was struggling against Gonzaga. But that's the thing. Oscar Tshiebwe is not a go-to scorer, and that's what they're treating him as such. Jacob Toppin's shooting 18 footers. It's very disorganized. Even if you make some of them, that's not a good shot. CJ Frederick and Reeves need to step up and shoot the ball better. Cason Wallace needs the reins. And that's a team that I thought on paper was going to be a top three team in the country. Houston's the only team that has put together what they are on paper and said, you know, this is what we are, and this is our identity, and we're already cohesive, in my opinion. Baylor's got the best guards on paper in the country, but you're seeing the moments where Keontae George needs to learn. Keontae George needs to learn how to play off the ball and not be the primary focus, because Adam Flagler and LJ Cryer can score. They scored 50 of 80 against UCLA, which is a top level team. And then one other team, and I'll end my rant. Duke is really searching for an identity, because Duke has a bunch of freshmen. They always do, but their best two freshmen were injured coming into the season. Dariq Whitehead's playing like a spot up shooter role. Kyle Filipowski is actually really impressing me. I was kind of low on him coming into the season. And Jeremy Roach is taking away from, I think, their best playmaker and Tyrese Proctor. And I don't think they're necessarily in a symbiotic relationship. So there's a lot of moving pieces for these teams with the most talent. And I think it's allowing teams that are more cohesive, like Purdue, to enter the fray early. UConn as well, who's got a lot of athletes and they know their identity, to be early. And I say all of this to bring up the point that you brought up, that it's early, things will change, and most of those teams I just brought up will get better, and maybe a team like Purdue or UConn could stagnate, but I don't buy their championship potential of some of those teams, because it's really hard to learn an identity on the fly and not have it coming into a season, and I'm a firm believer in that, and sometimes it's able to be done, but if you look at the last 10 championships, very, very few have learned an identity. Even the one and done freshman teams, which have there only been two, I would say they had their identity coming into the season. And I think that that's a strong concern for some of these teams coming in.
Yeah. And the one I'd want to touch on, because I feel like I've seen the most of them, is Duke. I mean, like you said, I also shared the preseason concerns of Kyle Filipowski. I did not see him being this good this quickly. He seems like the only freshman who really has found a fit so far in this system. I mean, you look at, even Mark Mitchell has found a little bit of some, but he's still searching for an identity. Not any person is searching for an identity on that team or like a role more than Derek Lively, I think. And you also touched on Dariq Whitehead. He is not playing at all how he played in high school. It's just really interesting. And I'm interested to see how they adjust. I think Tyrese Proctor, honestly, like, I love the guy. You know, I unlocked on NBA draft or big board. I was praising him all summer about how I thought he was a sleeper. He was a sleeper, but you know, he's been a little bit rough, and maybe it's time to give some of those shot creation chances to somebody like Dariq Whitehead, you know, and maybe let Derek Lively run more pick and roll. Don't just limit him to the post on defense, things like that. I think they're a team that they can learn a lot. And I think it just kind of feeds into just generally the, what are we going to see in the next 2 weeks? Because I mean, just looking at some of these top team schedules, we'll know a lot. I mean, I pulled up Indiana because that's a team I'm very high on. And I think they could end up in their next five. I mean, there's really a path to, I think, 5-0, but they play three ridiculously tough games. They play North Carolina on Wednesday, the end of November. They play Arizona the fall, like a week and a half from now. And then the Saturday after, they play Kansas. So, you know, if they come out winning two of three of those three, they also play Rutgers and Nebraska randomly sprinkled in with Big Ten in conference play. But I think they'll win those pretty safely. You know, things like that, like those teams have an identity, and how will those early season losses add up for those top teams? Like we see it every year. Losses in December matter to the committee, whether or not it's rational, they matter. So I think seeing something like that, if Indiana, for example, goes 3-0 against those teams, I think they'll get a significant benefit of the doubt, even if they're kind of slumping in March.
Yeah, and that's a solid point, that these teams that are going to have their litmus tests of, hey, we're actually playing significant competition in the next 2 weeks, and then we head to conference play where there's obviously significant competition, I think they're going to take a boost. And if they're able to take that boost, for instance, if Indiana is able to beat North Carolina, and I feel like Arizona is going to be a tough matchup for them, but should they win both of those, they're going to be in the top five. And then they run into Big Ten play. No one's going to run the gauntlet in Big Ten play. But that said, I think there's a real legitimacy to going into conference play firing, and then you play better basketball and you have a leg up. That said, that's a nice transition for something that I wanted to talk about, is just kind of early predictions of who was going to win the conference. We don't have to go into like rankings of it, just each conference, kind of give a rationale for that. And then we'll talk about teams to conclude that we think are better than the ranking and teams that are worse than their ranking. And we've kind of touched on a few of those, but let's start with the conferences. Let's start in the SEC. I think this one's up for grabs because most people had Kentucky coming in. Arkansas was a little fancy Cinderella coming in. I am impressed by Arkansas, so let's talk about them a little bit too. And then there's Tennessee, and then Auburn's, you know, top 15 in the country, but I don't feel like they're quite a contender. What's your read on the SEC?
Yeah, they're a really tough conference. It also wouldn't surprise me if something like Kentucky, you know, I really do think they should have beat Michigan State. I think they had way too many mental lapses at the end, which you could also argue is why they shouldn't have won, and they didn't. But I think they're a team that they can hang with anybody. It wouldn't shock me if they win the SEC. And you're talking just regular season, right?
Not the conference season.
It wouldn't shock me if they get really hot and they click, because they're one of those teams where it's like, hey, if things start to click, it'll make a little bit of sense. I think Auburn's also a team that hasn't clicked too much, and they're 7-0. Granted, their schedule's been pretty light, I would say. I think they're a team, though, that they still don't know how to use their two freshmen in Chance Westry and Johan Traore. Their guards have improved. I think they've become less of chuckers and just more score first, if that makes sense. Like, there's a massive difference of being a chucker and a score first guard. And I think they've moved on from that label. I think that's going to help them a lot. So actually, it wouldn't shock me if Auburn comes out of the SEC as the regular season champions.
That's a bold take, because I think talent-wise, they've got a chance. I think Bruce Pearl always gets the most out of those teams, so I can see it. I thought I'd have the bolder take here. I thought Kentucky or Arkansas would for sure be the take. I think Tennessee has the best mix of a veteran presence and talent, and they're playing a nice brand of basketball. I know they lost to Colorado. That was not a pretty loss. But I'm not the biggest Ken Pom believer in terms of like, oh, if they're ranked high in Ken Pom, I'm going to take them far in the tournament, or if they're ranked high in Ken Pom and not as high in the standings, I think they're better than they are. But this is one where I agree with Ken Pom. Tennessee is the number one defensive team in Ken Pom. They're 31st on offense, and that's a really good mix because they've got really experienced guards. They've got big bodies, wings. They ran Gonzaga out of a gym in a scrimmage. They beat Kansas pretty thoroughly. I think Tennessee has the best mix. Do I think they may be the best team in the SEC by down the road? I don't know. I really do like Arkansas. I think there's going to be growing pains for Arkansas that they haven't experienced yet, even as young as they've been, because their best player's coming back, Nick Smith. And I always find that that's a tough acclimation when a player that's ranked as your best player comes back, and it's you – you have to defer a little bit. It's kind of what Dariq Whitehead's going through, except I think that Nick Smith's going to be given the treatment that he was promised of, hey, you're the man, here's the ball. And Anthony Black's got Arkansas really thriving. Their one loss is to Creighton, and it was a really awesome game, and Creighton's a really good team. So I think I would go with Tennessee winning it. I think Kentucky's got some learning to do, and they have the time, but we are approaching conference play, so I'm gonna trust my eyes for now. And take the team that I think is the most cohesive, and they have a reputable amount of talent as well. Let's go to the Creighton Blue Jays in the Big East. I think I would say they're the best team in the Big East. I think they can score on anyone. Defense is okay, and that's really all they need to be, because they can really score. And I'm impressed by the way Baylor Shireman's fitting in and how they're able to play through. The only team that's been able to beat them was Arizona, who I'm very impressed by. And Creighton was able to make a really nice comeback to make it a closer game than it was. But Creighton's ninth offensively in KenPom, 36 on defense. That's a nice recipe for them. Do you have anyone else competing in the Big East? Because I like UConn a lot. I just don't think they can score with Creighton.
No, I mean, they're the only Big East team ranked, right?
UConn is too.
Oh, right. Yeah, should have just looked right there. UConn's really good. I just think Creighton, I mean, when it's all said and done, like, would it shock you if they got a one seed, honestly?
Probably not.
I got them winning it.
All righty. We're jumping around. We'll go from Big East to Pac-12, because we talked about Arizona. This one, before the season, I picked UCLA. I watched two Arizona games, and I think I've changed my mind. Arizona, they buy into Tommy Lloyd. Like, they run like deers. Their big guys are not small big guys. Like, you'd expect them to be very slender the way they run the run. Azulis Tubelis is like 6'10", 245, and Omar Ballo 7'1", 265. And they're up, the first ones up the court. Omar Ballo scored 31-11 on Ryan Kalkbrenner. And Kalkbrenner, I mean, I think he may have more rebounds than that. Might have been 31-13 or something like that. But Kalkbrenner is the reigning Big East Defensive Player of the Year. Probably is going to win it a second time. And he dominated him. And then they've got good guard play that I think will only get better. I do worry about their absolute ceiling. If the team's able to slow them, that's a big if they're able to slow down the pace, how are they going to generate looks? But they have veterans in the backcourt, and their front court's dominant. So Arizona's my pick in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I'm echoing everything you said. I just don't know who's going to compete with them for that spot.
Yeah, UCLA, I'm a little disappointed in, because they're so reliant on Tiger and Jaime Jaquez. I am impressed by Jalen Clark. Adembona's got flashes, but I'm not terribly impressed by Amari Bailey. I think it's an interesting fit making Tiger play the two almost when Amari's in. And Amari, I've been low on him for a while. So we'll see if he's able to elevate their stock. But I think right now they're kind of plateaued as a Sweet 16 team for me. All right, we're going to head to the Big 12, which may be the best conference in college basketball. Who do you got?
It's impossible to doubt Kansas. I think I want to say this, that even though this team is not ranked, they were the first team outside of the top 25. I do think TCU is going to be in the mix still, even though they had that horrendous loss. I forget who it was at this point, too, but their first three games were just all miserable. Lamar, Arkansas Pine Bluff, and I'm still drawing the blank. I just completely erased that game out of my memory that they lost in a bye game. But I think they're starting to click with Mike Miles healthy again. I think they're going to be in the mix. Like, this is a team that was a projected top four, top three, even Big 12 team. I'm going to still go Baylor, though. I think they're just too hard to doubt. You look at when, like, Jonathan Chama-Achachua looks fully healthy again. I think that's going to be a big difference for him.
You know what? This is weird. I haven't thought about this. I've said Baylor's going to win the national championship and be the best team in the country. I watched them play Virginia and UCLA, and I wasn't not impressed. I just thought they'd be better earlier on, and I can't shake how good Texas looked against Gonzaga, and I don't think Gonzaga's that great, quite frankly. But I'm going to go with Texas. Their guards are just as good, if not better, than what Baylor's are at this point, and they've got really solid depth. They're going to defend their butts off. They're going to score the ball. I love Tyrese Hunter. So I'm going to go with Texas as the best team in the Big 12. That may shock you, because I'm always the Baylor guy.
No, I like the pick.
All right. I think we're on to the Big 10. We're just jumping around the map. Big 10's wide open. And I'll lead this one off, because I think I have one that is not expected. Indiana's the highest ranked, or Purdue's the highest ranked team in the Big 10. Then Indiana. I would take Illinois as my favorite to win the Big Ten, because I think the way they score can be done by so many different people. It's not dependent on a single player. And I think their guards are only going to get better. I was really impressed by watching them play Virginia. I'm biased. I really like Virginia. But I was impressed by the way they play. And I think that was my favorite game I've watched so far live. And watching a game live is very different than watching on Synergy. But I'm going to go with Illinois for that reason. They can score in a plethora of ways. And secondly, they don't need to have one player be healthy, whereas Zach Edey and Trace Jackson Davis absolutely have to be healthy for those two teams to win.
That's a fair point. I'm personally banking on Trace Jackson Davis just staying healthy. He's been his entire career. Indiana's my pick. I love that team. I think they've completely maximized Trace Jackson Davis. They're still learning how to play Malik Renaud and Jalen Hood-Scafino, both of them five-star freshmen. I think they're just going to click really well. I think they've got a really balanced roster, and I like them a lot, and they have really good size too.
That's fair. I'm one of my good friends is an Indiana alum, and I'm sure when he listens to this, he'll be thrilled with your pick and not so thrilled with mine. At least I didn't pick Purdue, if you're listening. That said, let's go to ACC, and I kind of gave away my pick. I think Virginia is going to win the ACC, and that was not a popular take with Carolina coming in as the number one team in the country. I've been really disappointed in Carolina. It's like my turn, your turn between their guards. They played Alabama, and they played four overtimes, and I counted like three passes that weren't just inbounding the ball. The execution was terrible. I think they need to really find the identity of how to pass and defend. At least they're buying in on the defensive end a little bit more than they were earlier. Armando Bacot looks like he's hobbled. He's got a little injury. That won't be a huge deal down the road, but I'm lower on them. Duke's got some finding out to do in Virginia. Bennett Vanderplas, transfer from Ohio, was part of the team that beat Virginia a few years ago with Jason Preston. Really key addition. He's been an enormous factor into the success of Virginia. I'm really high on this team. Reese Beekman, Kihei Clark, veteran guards. They've got Armon Franklin's taking a nice step, shooting the ball. And this team's really shooting the ball. You know that Virginia under Tony Bennett's going to defend. And I think that there's too much growing pain for the teams on Tobacco Road to take the top spot. So I got the Virginia Cavaliers, the Wahoos, taking the number one in the ACC.
Dude, I had like 3 points I was all going to make, and you tackled every single one of them. I don't have anything else to add. It's Virginia rather safely for me.
All righty. So we've got a few minutes left here, and we're going to make the most of it. Tell me a team that you think is better than their ranking and will be an Elite Eight contender. And then we'll do the flip side. What team is ranked too high and you don't think has a chance to make it that far?
Does it have to be a ranked team?
No.
It's TCU. I think they had a terrible start out of the gate. I still think they're a candidate to make the Elite Eight this year.
I like it. Mike Miles, great point guard play, really good interior presence in Eddie Lampkin. Wings are the question mark there, but I think they've improved as well. And Damian Bach coming back is going to be a big deal.
Yep.
I'll go with a team that is ranked too high. I think it's easier to say like UConn or Purdue, but I'm not going to go with them. I'll say a team like, I'm just going to take all the blue bloods right now. I'm taking it easy. Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, UNC. I don't think any of them are as good as they are billed to be preseason. Maybe only one of those is an Elite Eight team. I think we're seeing madness in college basketball. You're seeing the new bloods take over this year. I'm not impressed, and I'll throw in Gonzaga in there. I think Gonzaga's absolute ceiling, I'm going to put in a spicy take, absolute ceiling is a Sweet 16 this year. I'm really not impressed by Gonzaga. Their guard play needs to improve tremendously. And obviously you can win a game. Like once you get into a tournament, it's a whole new deal, but I'm not a fan of the way they play. Kentucky, if Xavier Wheeler's at the reins, depending their draw, I think there's certain pitfalls. Duke's got the highest potential for growth of those teams. And North Carolina's really got to rein in Caleb Love. Everyone's talking about how he scored 30 something points. That was the worst 30 piece I've ever seen. So I think that there's some serious flaws for the Blue Bloods.
Yeah, for me, I think Alabama is somebody who I think they're a little bit too highly ranked for when you look at what they can do in March. They also top out as a Sweet 16 team. Who's your team for the underrated? I don't think I heard that one.
That's a good question. I think there's a few teams that are going to be better than where they're ranked. I think one is Arkansas, and that they're not even poorly ranked. I think they'll get better down the road. They're just going to have some growing pains. The other one I alluded to earlier to win the SEC is Tennessee. I think Tennessee losing to Colorado is a blessing in disguise for this team. They had no pressure, and they're the better team between them and Kansas. Kansas is ranked third in the country. Tennessee was 22nd in the country, and I don't think there was ever a doubt which team was better as soon as the ball was tipped in that game. And so I think Tennessee is my actual answer to that. I've got a few teams that, like, Illinois would be in there as well. I think they're better than where they're ranked. But there's not a contender I can clearly see. If you were to choose, and we're not going to hold you to this. If you were to choose a team that you think's got the best chance to win a national championship or just least flaws on their roster, who are you taking?
Arizona.
Interesting. We don't have the time. I like that pick. I think them and Creighton have defensive flaws, but they can alleviate that with offense. Right now, my pick's Texas, but I love Houston, but they don't score well enough. So I'm going with Texas, but I just don't trust Chris Beard in the tournament, even though he was good with Texas Tech. Well, that'll do it for College Hoop Hive. Richard Stamen, my guest today. We're going to run out of time here, but it's been a blast, and we're going to try to fire these off once a week, and we'd love to get you guys listening. And so thank you, Richard, for hopping on, and I can't wait to talk college hoops.